now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and the cheese in between. The movies are B, and your name is Grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Jackanetti. Dream Mad Michelle Jackanetti.
Good morning, Jay. Today we've got another anniversary film, but we don't have to go that far back to watch it, called The Collector, 2009.
And we'll get to it right after this. The Collector was released July 31st, 2009, with a 90-minute running time. Your director here is Marcus Dunstan. Now, Marcus Dunstan is a name that a lot of people might know. Well, people know him from, he did screenplays for Feast and Feast 2, Feast 3. But he's also known for Saw 4, Saw 5, Saw 6, and Saw 3D. So he's one of the writers on those movies, as well as directed. He directed The Collector, he directed The Collection, and he wound up directing Unhuman in 2022, but he's much more known as a writer. He also has a writing credit on this with Patrick Melton. It's based on The Midnight Man, which is by both Patrick Melton and Marcus Dunstan as well. Your producer here is Brett Forbes, Patrick Rosati, and Julie Richardson. Your cinematographer, Brandon Cox. Production company is LD Limited, Fortress Features, and Imaginaria Entertainment Group. So, a little independent thing, and then released, distributed through Freestyle Releasing. $3 million budget, $10.2 million box office. And then it was, this is a movie, as I've said previously, this is a movie that you walked by how many times at Blockbuster? Because this was a movie that I found because it was at Blockbuster. And Rue Morgue and Fangoria were talking about it, and that's the only way we could see it, because I don't remember this being in the movies anywhere around here. So, Your main character here is Josh Stewart. Josh Stewart, most of you would know, he was on Third Watch. He's in Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight Rises. He also had roles in Netflix's The Punisher and stuff like that as well. He's also known on the FX TV series Dirt. And then he was also on Criminal Minds. So he's a TV actor. Otherwise than that, everyone else is pretty much people you've never seen before, ever. Yeah, most everyone else is pretty much, this is their big one. Most of them are, again, most other people on here are from TV shows. This person appeared on like an episode of Charmed, and like they were in TV movies. That's what a lot of people wound up being. The original script was titled Midnight Man, which was one of the point was shopped as a spin-off sequel to the Saw franchise. So, and this was actually the supposed to be talked about being possibly the origin story of John Kramer or Jigsaw. And that was what it was pitched as originally, and then was not picked up. Freestyle Releasing actually wound up going into it. It did get a lot of, the critics did not love this movie. For obvious reasons, which we'll talk about. But it did get a sequel in 2012 known as The Collection. All right, so let's get started with this. The movie opens with married couple Larry and Gina Wharton return home and discover a large trunk upstairs. And then they open it up and they're horrified by the contents and they're attacked by an unseen assailant. Okay, so let's start there. So that's the beginning of the movie. Totally cold. Right. You have no idea what's going on, right? But what definitely sets this movie as being, and this is what I think starts to date this movie, is when you look at the graphics and the way the graphics are done, this is definitely an independent movie made for very little money. The graphics definitely look like they came off a computer generated, whatever. They're not slick. They're not, you know, stylized. You didn't have some other company coming and doing it. This is somebody just did whatever they could. The other prime thing is as you go through and literally is naming names of actors and nobody, you know.
Right. I mean, but and the, what I, what the, I hadn't seen this movie, I guess, probably in at least 10, 12 years. I'm not sure when the, well, the DVDs would have come out pretty soon.
Yeah, this was in 2009. This was already in the.
I can honestly say I didn't remember seeing this movie. It might have been one that when I started to watch it, that I didn't go all the way through it, but I'm sure I did. But the thing with what you just mentioned is that after the opening scene, where they open the box and they're horrified, the credits come on, and the credits are so disjointed. They're very disorienting visually. You almost get a little bit nauseous watching them. And what believe it or not, what really struck me was they went through all of the characters, and then they go to the production people. There are three music credits.
Yeah.
Three music credits. They don't have three music credits on a John Williams movie. So I said, this is, maybe there's a lot of, you know, songs or music going through there. And then as the movie goes on, there's noise behind every scene, but it's
well, there's songs and they have songs during the movie, and that's probably where some of it's from.
Yeah,
because they had like a Depeche Mode song. They have different things, but there's different music.
Because it just struck me that why would you have three music ones? And then when that's over, then they go right into the movie.
Okay, so former convict Arkin O'Brien works as a handyman for the Chase family. After work, he meets his wife whose debt to a loan shark is due by midnight. To protect her and their daughter, Arkin plans to steal a valuable ruby from the Chase home. Okay, so that's the basic setup, what's there. So he's there doing handyman work. He's sanding the door and whatever. And he has interactions with, he now realizes where the safe is. He knows all this. He's kind of casing the house. That's really what he's doing. And he has an interaction with the younger daughter, Abby, because he has a younger daughter. What that scene also shows there is she goes out to take a sip from her fake teacup and he grabs the cup because there's a brown LaCruz spider. That's right. What those are, right? Leading you to kind of like, I mean, they're foreshadowing things to come because he goes outside to
the greenhouse
where he's smoking a cigarette and there's a wasp nest. And those are like, again, I'm not sure what kind of wasp, but they don't look very happy, those wasps. They're like, they're decent size and whatever. So
now when he's pretty calm about it, so he doesn't rile them up.
Right. Well, he's also smoking a cigarette. He blows the smoke on them. It kind of makes them dissipate because that's what.
Now, the thing is, you know, your opening thing was, we don't know he's an ex-con.
You learn it as soon as the dad, the father says, I know it's part of the work. You're not supposed to be by yourself. It's part of the work release program, whatever kind of thing. Right. But they obviously trust him. He's been working on the job for a while because they don't have someone standing there with him, watching. He's able to go work where he needs to work because they trust him. Right. So,
I know we're just getting started in here, but as the movie goes on, there's a tell right away when he's in the smoke, the greenhouse, and he leaves and he goes back to his truck. As he's walking back to his truck, he calls over to the crew that's doing the remodeling work. And he says, hey, there's a,
well, that's the pest control.
Yeah.
It's the pest control guy. Yeah.
And he says, there's a wasp nest by the greenhouse. And this big guy he doesn't say great. He just gives him a thing. And again, that's a tell. At least it was to me as we go along. And
but you would have to know if you have never seen the movie, you don't know that bugs are important.
No, no. Yes, but all I know is when you're watching the movie, as certain things start to unravel, it's like an Alfred Hitchcock thing. You were told something.
But that's not a tell. That's not a tell. Is in them.
Well, whatever.
What they're doing is it's there so that when you later go back and think about it, you're like, oh my God, I knew but I don't know it was. That's not a tell. Okay. A tell is giving things away and knowing you're giving it away. It's in there. It's like how in Seven, the entire movie can, if you just watch Spacey's eyes, you can watch that he's looking around the office, but you don't know to look at his eyes. It's not a tell. It's just what it is. But it's able to go back. He's foreshadowing it, kind of thing. It's So, all right. So that's, we also meet the other daughter, Jill, who is, bums a smoke from him, which he knows is going to turn into an issue, but they all seem very comfortable with him, being there. It's just part of a crew doing a job. So, as he's, doing so, where am I here? Okay. Sorry. I was just reading something. Okay. So, he's going to go back to see it. So he goes and he now knows that he can't, so the father, Michael, gives him his pay and gives him a little extra money for his daughter. And when he goes to the bowling alley and he meets his wife and stuff, and they know that he's got a loan shark. So he goes to whoever the guy who's running the crew that he's supposed to be casing this house. He tells him, I need to get paid by midnight. And, you know, they're like, well, we're not going to pay you. He's like, well, find somebody else and get you in. Like, he knows how to get in the door. So this is when he now, again, he's not going to walk in the front door. He knows they're going to be out because they already know they're going to have plans. He knows that the daughter's going to be out. They're all going to be out. So he goes in the back door. He's able to sneak in the back door, get upstairs to where the safe is. And it all seems quiet. And then he hears somebody in the house. And once he hears somebody in the house, he now has to like put the thing back and he hides and whatever. And you don't know at this point who's in the house. You know, it's it's obviously not like the daughter kind of thing. You can see because they show like big work boots and whatever kind of thing like that. But that could be any person in there.
Right. But the next scene. First of all, as he's trying to enter the house, there's a dog on a
chain,
which was not there to begin with. And even while he's in the house and he goes up the stairs and he's got his tools now to open up the safe, the mystery man, and we'll call it a mystery man, who then enters the house, he has a key to the front door. And so that said to me, that's where I said, again, you don't call a tell, like you said, but that says to me, right, it said that to me, that there's somebody on the crew that was there,
right,
that were working in the house that knew something. And so that's why, in retrospect, it's the guy he tells that there's.
So you don't know at this point, though, if it's another guy on the cleanup crew, that it's the bug exterminator, because there's a bunch of people working.
Right,
but you don't know who it is.
But the guy opens the front door with a key.
Yeah.
So he obviously was the one who installed the lock, or he stole the key. But he gets into the house not by jiggling two tools.
Well, but Arkin gets in the back door by breaking in the way he normally would. He picked the lock.
Right, picked the lock.
All right. So so as he's as Arkin's upstairs, Michael the father appear. He's injured and he's triggers a trap and it's dragged down to the basement by the masked man. Right, Arkin attempts to call 911, picks up the phone, which is rigged with a spike, very Hitchcock, and it punctures in the ear. The windows are also boarded up, and he goes to pull it open, and the razors come across his hands and are slicing up his hands, making an impossible escape. Okay, so this is where a lot of people, in 2009, this is post-Saw, we're now into the later Saw movies kind of thing, kind of like, right. So... we'll get into like the Saw sequels and we're getting into all the Saw ripoffs, movies that once they saw how successful Saw was, they tried to all start doing this. If the term that's often used is the term torture porn, which I think is, you know, just useless, but that's what it is. It's the idea of gratuitous violence for the sake of gratuity violence. Much like you would see in like Hostel and movies of that ilk, where people immediately write those movies off because there's no chance they could have anything to offer me because it's showing people getting cut up and brutalized and whatever. The problem is that was, we now at this point, things have started happening so quickly. These movies started getting churned out quickly. So a lot of people lump all of them together without ever kind of looking at what's happening in each one of those films.
Yeah. My point at this stage was, the family was were out. Well, the father, the mother, and supposedly the little daughter were going to be gone for the night. They were going to like some sort of a party, I guess it was. Yeah. And the older daughter said, "I'm not going with you." And they didn't realize that she was gone too because she was on a date. But the amount of time that this is what lost me immediately here. The amount of time from when the family left to when the key is put in the door, or when Arkin is upstairs doing getting the diamond, I guess is what it is, in the safe, the amount of rigging and setup in the entire house could not have happened in that short a period of time. It was so diverse with wires and hooks and tethers and trip wires and laser beams that were all around this place. You could not have done it. And I lost the movie here. This is where I lost it. Now, all I said to myself was, okay, now what we're going to have is every one of these things that are being trip wired and set up and everything else, somebody's going to run into or be chopped and done. And it said to me, this is exactly what this movie is. It has got no story at this point. It's now how many different kills can we have, or how many maims can we have? And that's where I lost the movie. Does it mean that all the special effects were just gratuitous? They probably were, but they were done real well.
No, yeah.
The special effects here are amazing.
For a $3 million budget?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Now, in all fairness, most of this movie takes place inside the house.
Right.
So there's not a lot of exterior to shoot, not a lot of like,
no,
it's but, a, I mean, it's a real house on the outside.
Right. I definitely spent all the money on all of the traps. Effects,
yeah. Yeah. Nothing looks fake in the traps. So, so Arkin retreats to the basement where, Michael informs him that his wife, Victoria, has also been captured. His older daughter, Jill, is out, and the younger daughter, Hannah, or I think I called her Abby before, I might've done that. I said it's Hannah, is hiding in the house. Michael gives Arkin the combination to the safe, which contains the gun, and Arkin grabs the gun, which has no bullets, and pockets the ruby. Now he goes to the bottom drawer looking for the bullets that he thinks the box of bullets is empty.
Empty.
Right? And you know, that's one of the things too. It's like the whole time as this is going on, you're thinking like so he could very easily, this is the point where he just leave. Could just leave. But he goes because he knows that they're trapped, and this is one of the whole underlying things of the whole story is, just because he's an ex-con, it doesn't mean that he's only looking out for himself. He's worried about, he may obviously take care of his wife and his kid, but he's worried now about Jill, and more importantly, worried about Hannah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, right? He comes across as a nice guy.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is like, so this is a guy who's going to steal, you know, their whatever. He's money because they got loan sharks. He goes and sees the guy who sent up the thing in a strip club. Like there's not a lot of like things here. Like, well, this doesn't seem like the most redeeming values to have here, but he's ultimately at the end of the day, just wants to be a good father, wants to provide for his daughter and wants to get them out of trouble. And then he's going to now risk his life to try to save this other little girl who done nothing wrong. You know, he tries to save everyone. He tries to save everyone in the movie, but it winds up, you know, falling short. He's upstairs. Arkin finds a trunk containing the bloodied Larry. Larry explains the masked man is a collector of people. And he only collects one person from each house and kills everyone else. Horrified, Arkin flees and discovers that Michael is now dead. And he frees the tortured Victoria, who is then killed by the collector. So he knows Victoria's downstairs. He used her as a distraction to get the collector back to the basement. And then he goes and he tries to get her out of there. And she sees her husband now disemboweled. You know, just all is everything there. She runs up the stairs to where she is then stabbed repeatedly and then thrown back down the stairs. As the collector is now, you know, putting her in the tub and he's going to like wind up bleeding her out, Arkin makes his way back up to get out. Jill, and then that's when he's...
Thing is, in the scene with the tub, it looked like he was pouring gasoline from a red can.
Yep.
But was that gasoline? But he never lit it.
No, but that's what happens. Remember when Arkin goes back and he's going to blow the whole house up. He has it all wired with explosives. It's to make sure the body burns. It's to make sure everything disintegrates. So there's nothing found. That's the whole point, is that like the whole house is wired to explode and so everything will burn. At this point, Jill arrives home with her boyfriend, Chad. Arkin breaks the window trying to yell to her, but he can't hear her over the storm. They're going to go in the front door, which would have led to the chandelier full of knives being slammed. And then they go in the back door, which is unlocked. And Jill even says, that's weird. It's never unlocked. And it's unlocked. At this point, as they're starting to, fool around in the kitchen, the collector's watching them. And Arkin now has positioned himself downstairs in the dining room, surrounded by bear traps, right? This is when Jill notices the collector. Chad is killed and then shoved into the room with all the bear traps, including the bear trap taking one to the head, which could look really fake, but they did a really good job here. So these must have been physical effects. If they're digital, the digital in 2009 would look bad. So these were physical effects. So they spent money on doing that, which is good. As Jill starts to flee, the collector, you know, knocks her out and he chains her to the stairs with barbed wire around her throat, a razor wire around her throat, razor wire around her wrists. Where are we here? Jill manages to call 911 on her cell phone before she's captured. Arkin then is able to get the collector to go upstairs. He gets downstairs to free her, and she freaks out because she thinks he's doing it. She grabs the scissors, which are booby trap, yanks them, which of course slams her against the trap, then springs and she gets impaled against the spikes on the wall. This is the point where Arkin escapes the house. And as he's escaping, now, if you watch the deleted scenes, the alternate scenes, there is one on the DVD, when he's outside the house, when he looks back and he sees Hannah banging on the window, there's a scene they literally shot where he gives her the finger and keeps going. And I'm like, wow, that was not that. Now, I think they filmed that just to be a deleted scene.
Yeah.
I don't think that was ever going to be used because there's no way in the world he abandons her at this point. Right. But he sees the collector hearing her and he's going up. So now he's got to break back into the house, go back through the window. But we also know there's, so when Arkin's able to get, okay, so Arkin gets back upstairs. What's that? You want, did somebody say? No.
No.
He wrenches the house. Arkin prepares to trap and kill the collector. So they get in there. So he gets to Hannah. They get in the room and he's mad because she didn't, because he was looking for her. He was calling for her and she wouldn't answer. So as they're breaking in the door, he's got the giant fish tank he's going to throw on, knock on the ground. She's got the TV she's going to throw in. As the door bursts open, the tank hits the ground. They start to electrocute the water and they throw Larry's body in there. Larry gets killed now, completely fried, because the collector realized he probably was getting set up. this leads to them going throughout the entire, so they go down. So he sends, so Hannah goes down the laundry chute to hide. Before he can do so, the collector captures him and begins to torture him. The police officer responding to 911 shows up, and the collector goes out the door and he's telling him to stop, stop. And that's when the dog, which we've now forgotten exists there, attacks this guy and rips his guy's throat out. Very much Dickie from The Beyond, ripping out the throat. Arkin frees himself and discovers that Victoria is dead and the whole house is rigged with explosives. The dog is now, the collector brings the dog in. The dog's chasing him. He lights the garbage on fire, shoves the dog's head into the garbage pail on fire, throws the body of the dog onto the collector, which knocks him into one of his own traps, which allows them to escape. So as they're running into the road to get the additional police car, the police car, of course, plows directly into Arkin because why not? Sending him completely over. He sees Hannah being carried off by the police officer and tells him the collector was the exterminator working in the house before. The explosives detonate, but the collector has gotten away unharmed. While Arkin is being taken to the hospital, the collector rams into the ambulance and kills the and winds up killing the people in the ambulance and then kidnaps him. Our post-credit scene shows the collector watching film slides on the family trunk, on the trunk, while Arkin's inside threatening to kill him, which was what we, which leads into the collection, which is the second movie.
Yeah. Now, there's a scene at the end. I mean, you see in early in the beginning when Arkin is going to steal the jewel, he gets the jewel when he gets the gun, but it's a big rock.
It's a ruby.
It's as big as his hand. He puts it in his pants pocket.
Yeah.
At the end, when the EMT is handling him as the ambulance is driving away, he finds, as he cuts the clothes away, he finds the ruby.
Yeah.
And that's so, you know, but that, so that means the ruby is now gone, because after the crash, it's part of all the morass of the stuff that's being knocked around. And somebody will find it when the police go through there. I don't know why that was, you know, why he had to show that he put it in his pocket, and then at the end, the guy takes it out and it's right on the camera. He shows it right to the screen, and then that's when the van.
So happy with there being continuity? You're the guy who's always being continuity. It wasn't like it was in his pocket.
That's probably the only continuity thing in the entire.
But I'm saying
movie.
But like it's in his pocket. It's still in his pocket right. When you're cutting the clothes off him. To find out where his injuries were.
Yeah, no, but that's about the only thing that was in continuity for the whole picture. I understand you never find out exactly why he's got the box in a closet in the house, which means besides wiring the entire place, he had to bring the box with him, stick it in a closet with the guy from the beginning of the movie in it.
He's the bait, yeah.
I mean, but again, so what's he collecting? And why would he be dragging the box with the 150-pound man all around the place to stick it in his house? Why is he going to this house? That's never explained. To me, it turned out there was so many questions of why, where, how, when, who, that, as I said to you in the beginning, to me, this was, let's put in as many traps as we possibly can in an hour and a half and get away with it. This is not a movie that a teenage boy would have taken his girlfriend to.
No, it really didn't play much in theaters,
though. Well, no, but whether it did or not, it's not a movie that at the end of that movie, she's going to hold his hand walking out the door. It is a gruesome, to me, it got to the point it'd almost be disgusting, because we've seen these traps before, but there's no storyline that goes from beginning to end. There's nothing that I'm watching and I'm saying, why am I watching this? It's just going from one trap to another. And are they going to get out? Who cares? At this point, Arkin, he's got so many things that have gone wrong, that blood has spilled out of him from being caught in two or three of the different traps, that he needs going to need a gallon of blood just to be alive. I mean, to me, it was, Jay, I would rather have watched the Nightmare Before Elm Street or the Jason Voorhees movies.
Nightmare on Elm Street. Those movies are very different films.
Yeah, no. Let's go back to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's no blood. yet it's gruesome as you go through, but the storyline goes from beginning to end. Here, the entire, other than the last 5 minutes of the movie, don't tie into anything. It's just how many gruesome things can happen to a few people. And I still have questions that can't be answered, because I'm sure that the producer that when they put this thing together, they said, let's outdo Saw, because you wrote Saw.
So he wrote the later Saw.
Yeah, but how many things can we put in this movie? And again, when you think about it, there are more traps and more gotta hide your eyes in this movie than there is probably in any other thing that I've watched. I guarantee that from my perspective. Now, were the special effects done well? I mentioned it before. They are tremendous. There's nothing looks fake. I mean, even the one scene where Arkin's got the hooks on his body, that harkens back to Hellraiser. Yeah. Okay? Well, and it's done real well. But again, at that point, you're almost immune to the gore, because you've seen so much of it that I think probably the one scene that I remember, why is there hot glue on the floor?
That's not hot glue. It's acid.
Acid or whatever. Yeah. Whatever it was.
It's just so you can't get through that room.
Yes.
Yeah. He's trying to trick. Okay. So in all fairness, Marcus Dunstan wrote Saw. He's got writing credit on Saw 4. That was before this, and Saw 5 and Saw 6. They got the and Patrick Melton. So it's the same people who did it. So what happened was, So Saw 4 is 07, Saw 5 is 8, Saw 6 is 9, right when this is coming out, and then Saw 10 is Saw 3D, so the seventh one is 2010. So, but this is right in that. So his success in the Saw movies is what got him the chance to direct this one, because he's not a director, he's a writer, right? So this is a small budget thing that they're trying to put up, but they are literally trying to make this for exactly what they did, because what they did was, this movie came out, had its run in theater, opened on like 1200 screens, like it's supposed to, whatever. And then Blockbuster exclusively put this out in February as part of its Blockbuster exclusive line, where it's rented tons of times, because when you put it out in February, everyone just saw the Saw movie that came out in the fall of 09. The next Saw movie is coming fall of 10. So this fits right in there. And then it wound up going to wide release on April 6th that the DVD became wide available. It was only rental, because it was rental only for a while, which made it just like going to see a movie. And it did crazy rentals at Blockbuster.
Oh, I'm sure. Right? I'm sure once word got out. That there's a movie that
no, because Fangoria and Rue Morgue and all of them were talking about it. Because again, and I know you do, again, whether you like the movie or not. What it does, it does exactly what it says on the tin,
exactly.
Right? Yep. There's, you don't go into this movie expecting Citizen Kane, right? You're going to this movie expecting there to be a lot of blood and a lot of guts, like, literal guts being spilled and like things that are going to make you squirm. Like what winds up happening is when we're watching the Saw movies, when you watch the first Saw movie, go back and watch the first Saw movie, there's not a lot in that movie. There's a lot of talking in that movie.
Right, yeah.
So there was not a lot there. But then they knew that people aren't going to be okay with a lot of talking. We got to amp up the other stuff.
Yep.
And it kept getting amped up and amped up and amped up. And this is just another in that cycle. I like this movie. I thought this movie and then the sequel I like a lot. You put them both back to back. The sequel fills in all those gaps, tells you all the stuff. And the sequel they spent a little more money on, because this one made, $3 million investment, returned $10 million on it. That's a pretty good return on investment.
Yeah.
But what winds up happening is you have a bunch of movies that I guarantee you've never even seen that are in this same vein, made for more money, which have way less story and not as good as special effects. What makes this one stand out is because the effects look good.
Right.
Everything looks believable because there's no one in this movie you know. It's not like, hey, look, that's... that's Cary Elwes or that's this guy or that's... Yeah. You don't know these people, so you have no connection to them in that they are from this other movie.
Right. When you get right down to it, after the first 10, 15 minutes, when the supposedly the family is going,
right.
There's no dialogue.
There's very little dialogue.
You don't have
to. It's a lot of Arkin being frustrated.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Going back and forth.
Right.
I agree that this movie was, it wasn't groundbreaking because followed all the others.
Yeah.
But they put too many traps, too, like you're supposed to have a gap. I don't know, let's say a minute, whatever it is. But it seems like no matter what, you just got stabbed by something that came out of the wall. Within 15 seconds, you're now walking into a room with hanging fish hooks. So there was no time to even take a deep breath and watch the story progress, because it was a roller coaster that was always going downhill.
Right. Well, that's the difference between the slasher movies that you had and into what this was. The slasher movies, if you take a stopwatch, you can time it out. And I've said this before. Yep. It's literally like a porno. Like every climax, every kill is so many minutes apart. So unless the audience come all the way up, climax, come all the way back down, come back and climax. That's what it is. When Saw did, and not the first Saw, but Saw 2, it's because Saw 2 took it and just turned it up, right? It's like Hostel is boring for the first half, and then it gets gratuitous the second half, which is why Hostel 2 is the better movie, right? What happened was when you had these type of movies, these gross out slaughtering kind of things, they just said, hey, let's take the stuff that turned your stomach in Maniac and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer and those things, and let's turn that up and let's make it so punch you in the face over and over and over again with it so that there's no let up. So the audience feels like they're being attacked. That's what these movies are designed to do. It's designed to hit you over and over and over and over again, because they're running from this and he's here and they go, he runs to the bathroom. The girl runs and nothing happens. He turns and he's right there. He gets a fish hook in the eye.
Right.
And you're like, okay. Right. Like even the picking the phone up with the needle going in the ear, like little things like that. You're like, yep. I knew that had to happen. Like, besides I know my Hitchcock, right. But it's the way these kind of movies are. I tend to enjoy when they're made well, like the effects look good. When the effects look bad, now the effects that look bad in this movie are the spiders, not the actual real spiders, but the digital spider outside. I'm like, oh God, why is that there? And that nothing grounds this in 2009 more than that spider, right? That he shows the spider outside, not when he finds the brown LaCruz downstairs and he lets it out the window, right? But the whole thing is that these movies are designed to keep pounding and pounding and pounding at you. Which is one of the reasons why, when Rob Zombie makes his movies and I'm not talking the House of Thousand Corpses, people just don't like him because they're Rob Zombie, but I'm talking like 31 and they like movies that are just dirty and grimy and whatever. And they're supposed to look like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and they look like that, but they don't. They look like this because they're blood and gore and people getting eviscerated and there's little like crazy people running around and getting slicing people up and there's a guy in a gimp suit and whatever else happens in this kind of movie. But that's the whole point, is that's the different kind of film where that's why this is. I mean, to me, this movie, the one thing I can tell you is you start going and it never lets up. The hour and a half goes by fast because there's no time to catch your breath and realize that you're sitting there, right? If this movie was 2 hours, it would be way too long. It went at 90 minutes, including the credits. And I mean, the end credit scenes there just as a back end. But you're talking about what? Probably 86 minutes of film.
Right.
Right. And then if you take out the beginning part, maybe 85 minutes of actual stuff on film. And it goes quickly. To hold your attention. I mean, this is why this movie, again, it rented really well for a reason. And people liked it. This movie became more of a cult movie because it was never in the theaters where you see it. And it became something I know people don't believe that you could have a cult movie during the time of Blockbuster, but that's what it did. People discovered this movie, either they rented it or they walked past it a million times. And then it's in the $5 bin, which people don't even understand how cool that used to be. You could get a movie for $5, what it costs to rent a movie. And you brought it home, you're like, what's the worst that happens? It sucks. I mean, that's why if I rented it and it turns out it's good. I mean, there's so many movies that are like that are just dumped and no one talks about except the Roomworks and the Fangorias and the Horror Hounds and whatever they talk about. And this is one of them. And getting the sequel made, this movie hit Blockbuster, like I said, in February of 2010, wide release April in 2010 on DVD. They started filming October of 2010 for The Collector. Because it made so much money, they're like, we have it. And The Collector, I think, either went directly to Blockbuster, It might have had some time in the theater, but they were like, we now have some money coming in. They gave him the same people. Everyone came back. They gave him money. They go, make another one of these and let's amp it up and let's see what more story we can do. Because the second one got a lot of story to it because you start learning more about what's happening.
Right. And that's what I miss from here. Now, Jay, you've lived with me for all your life. You know, I'm not a prude.
Yeah.
I don't mind. Like the Saw movies I like because there is that gap between but again on the Saw movies or even in some of the others, there is a reason for what's going on. And here, well,
we don't have the reason yet. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I still don't understand. I didn't understand. That's what I said when I got to the point where I said, why am I watching this? When I say that to myself, then I either missed something. Or maybe this movie isn't what it should have been. And here, there's no way in the world the house could have been rigged the way it was
in that
short a period of time. If they had left on vacation, and they showed the family driving away, then I could understand the guy going in. But there's no reason for any of this to be happening in such a short period of time. As for the kills, fine. I mean, the kills, like we said, they're great, but they happen so frequently that if you're starting to doubt before the third or fourth kill starts, and then you got 12 more to come, I'm sitting here and saying when this movie ended, I'm saying, boy, I'm glad I didn't buy the DVD.
You watched it on Prime. Yeah. I own it on Prime.
Yeah, I watched it on Prime, would have liked to have if there was a DVD that had deleted scenes or explained more.
Yeah, the deleted scenes don't add anything.
But they don't add anything.
No, no.
So, again, we review all these movies together, Jay, and there are times
we don't have to agree.
We haven't disagreed too much on.
Well, because I also purposely pick movies that I pick movies on purpose certain ways to make it whatever.
Yeah.
I don't pick movies that are often, I don't pick movies that I don't like. Because I'm not going to sit there. I'm not going to have anyone sit down and watch Hereditary or something garbage that.
But yet we've watched them. We've seen them.
Well, I had to watch Hereditary for a different podcast, heard me hate that movie.
But there
are movies that I don't enjoy that I'm not going to want to ever talk about and review.
Yeah.
Because me bashing a movie where I can't use the any kind of colorful language at all tends to not go effectively. Like, this movie is a bunch of poopy. Like, that doesn't work well. Right. So what I'm saying is, but I'm purposely picking films because since we only do what we do, it's fine. Again, not liking these movies, there are people out there who are going to agree with me that they love this movie. It's like, I remember this. Oh my God, I've got a blockbuster, whatever kind of thing. Because if that's the kind of stuff you're into the same way that there are people who love the first Hostel and were like, oh my God, it's amazing. And I'm watching the Hostel going, okay, it's nothing special. I mean, it's gross at times. It's painful to watch at times. But I've said this from Jump Street. I think Hostel 2 is a much better movie, just from the fear, the pure fear in that movie. When they're torturing the girls, and that's not a sexist thing. It's literally the movie. They're torturing them. You're like, they literally did nothing. The guys in Hostel are jerks. Sorry, spoiler alert. They're jerks. Right, kind of thing, but that's what I'm saying. So, but anything else, Dad? But it's like anything else. Certain movies have things in it that turn you off to them that I don't even care about. Right? Like, I'm watching. We can watch a movie. You tell me about it. Like, oh, we watch this older movie, whatever. I'm like, okay. Like, I'm never gonna sit and watch that other movie because I know I have so limited time. I'm not watching a movie that I have no interest in watching, and it's about fill in the blank. Civil War. Whatever. I don't care. Right? Whatever. But kind of thing. But if Quentin Tarantino made a movie about the Civil War, well, I like Quentin Tarantino. I like his movies. I know what I'm going to get. So am I going to sit down and watch every spaghetti Western ever? No. Did I love Django? Yes. I love those? Yes. But like, it's like any other number of things. It's fine. Dad, like I said, that's part of what it is though. So being people out there are going to go, some of our listeners definitely have seen this movie because they rented it or they picked it up. Did you see this, folks? Did you rent it? I would be astounded to find anybody who saw it in the theater. But if you did see it in the theater, that'd be cool. But if you did rent this, what do you think? Shoot us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. If you've never seen if you've never seen it, you need to see it. If you've never seen the sequel, So if you watch this, you really got to watch The Collection. The Collection, because this picks up and it ties everything back in. It explains all the stuff that's starting to happen and where it's going. And that movie, they definitely spent some more money on. Yeah. But that also doesn't take place all inside one house.
Yeah. And I think
it's a club.
And I think when you have that second movie that explains a lot, okay, that might have been part of the criticisms of this movie, because there no questions are ever answered. You know, there's a lot more questions than there are solutions. So if the second one, if you watch this one and then that one right after it, that's another hour and a half movie, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not like you're going to waste the whole day doing it, and it explains it. I intend to watch The Collection.
Well, we're going to cover The Collection eventually too.
Yeah. But I will watch The Collection soon, just so that if it ties back into this movie, I can say to myself, okay, you missed this, you missed that.
Well, no, there's not stuff you're going to miss in the Collector. There's not things that you miss that are so like obvious that like, oh, I should have known that.
Yeah.
But what happens is you don't know about this person. You know nothing about him. This isn't it's like in Saw, they explain to you why he's like this. But then, right. but you know, your knowledge of Saw, you eventually have to go through and now you're what? 10, 12 movies, however many movies we are in the Saw, right? That's built the whole character of John Kramer to a different level. You know what I'm saying? So now you know all about this, and this, he has this, he has cancer, and he has this, and he went here, and he died this. Like now you now know this whole guy's life. You're far more invested in him as a character than you are in many other characters. But that's what happens when a movie is standalone or just one sequel.
See, that's why Maniac is outstanding.
Yeah.
Because you got, there's a backstory to him.
And well, then, yeah, and there's some.
But
yeah.
No. But
there's
but
enough the, where you kind of know enough, that.
But again, you open it up and he's a man. He's a character. He's not some guy in a black mask that, he's a ghost or whatever. Yeah. How you want to think. But that's why when you watch a movie like Maniac, there's just as much gore and blood and disgusting things. But again, it's part of the movie and it makes sense.
It's fine.
I don't want to rehash what I've been saying, but you know, there are times we agree and there are times we disagree. And this is one of the ones where, will I ever watch this movie again? No, I will watch The Collection to try to understand, you know, where the first one was coming from. But, this one's going back in the vault.
So, obviously that we said that there was that. And then, there is still rumored in 2019, we got a poster for The Collected, is The Collected, and has a 3 in it. So it's the third sequel. But as recent as June of 2022, Marcus Dunton has said that there probably will never be the third one ever getting produced. Although when they announced it, a lot of people got really excited because they were hoping to finish off the trilogy of these movies. The whole idea that the third movie to finish the trilogy probably will not happen because there's creative differences between whoever's writing whatever. Could it happen? Sure. We never say never. We never thought we'd see House of Thousand Corpses ever get released, but when it became worthless and worthless and worthless to Sony and Rob Zombie kept buying pieces back, he eventually got enough ownership to buy it all, and then we got to see it. So, all right, folks. So that about does it for this one. Now, up next, we are going to be talking about going back to 1944 and The Mummy's Ghost. With Kaharis and Princess Ananka and the Banning family is all dead. So
and black and white.
And it's back in glorious black and white. No offense, as Mel Brooks would say. So that about does it for us, folks. So like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which up until a few days ago was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!